Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for week 4 of Big Brother All-Stars. My name is Mike Bloom here for another week, really serving as the bidet of RHAP podcast, and that we are the cool jet of water to maybe clean out some of the, for lack of a better term, crappiness that has been occurring in Big Brother All-Stars so far. We have a great panel here to break down everything from week 4. Of course, someone who I would never leave hanging, unlike everyone in the veto competition, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy that you brought up the bidet situation. I was also thinking if we're going
bidation,
based on
Enzo's
bidet. Oh, yes. Given the whole bidation we have going on here. No, I was actually going based on the analogy that Enzo made with Danny being the weed. What was her, the gardener? Yes, the gardener
planting. And he wants to be the weed whacker.
That's what I was going to say. This is the weed waxation. Waxition? What is it?
Activity competition?
Oh, no. Anyway, the whole point is we're here. We're going to have some fun. We're going to break up the monotony of Big Brother 22 and talk about a lot of really fun things.
And it's actually ironic because I believe some people have said they need weed to get through the Big Brother B&B. So let's make sure we don't whack it sooner rather than later. We are so happy to bring this guy on. He's been a standout of the class of 2020. You've heard him talk BB a couple of times, but this is his B&B debut. Phil Thompson, welcome to the B&B. How's it going?
What's going on, Mike? And Liana, thank you for so much for having me. This week, it's great to be on the B&B this week just because I have been watching the show mostly fuming for the most part. And so it's very fun to be able to come on here and just have some fun and be able to just let loose and just talk about this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's fun to fume sometimes as well. We're not going to preclude people from fuming, but we certainly have the right to go on the lighter side here. For people who don't necessarily know you, Phil, from the couple times you've appeared on the recaps proper, just give a quick little intro about who you are and your fandom and history with Big Brother going into season 22.
Yeah, so I am a film student, and I've been a Big Brother fan. I've been a Big Brother fan for a long time, maybe about like 5 or 6 years at this point. And I really love the strategy of the game, but I also really love just like the television production side of it and like the storytelling side of it. And so it's just great to kind of just watch like the live feeds happen and then watch how they piece everything together and watch how they edit the story. That's like one of my favorite parts of just like reality TV in general. And so it is great, always great fun to just like, even though like if I'm not enjoying something 100%, it's just great to just watch them piece it together and, you know, it's enjoyable.
Well, because you're also watching it from that unique perspective, which mm-hmm. is at least, even if it's not from an entertainment perspective going the way you want, at least you can maybe learn something from it. Oh, what was the choice that they made here in order to assemble the story in that way? So I think that's definitely looking on the bright side of things. You can get some type of enjoyment out of Big Brother.
With Big Brother too, it's sometimes like you learn like what not to do. You know how like mm-hmm.
there's some. Wait, like, are you saying you don't insert random boings and cartoon sound effects in the middle of every scene you do?
Oh yeah, that 10-second shot of Janelle with the like the Hail the Chief or whatever song last yeah. episode was a little bit much, and I learned, you know, maybe I shouldn't do that. Yeah. Better than film school, honestly. Big Brother is film school.
Okay, well, I actually have a question, right? Because they use so many sound effects. Like, does that bother you? Do you like that? Do the Christmas bells every single time? Christmas does literally anything.
I do kind of appreciate like the hard work they put into it. Like I do appreciate how like they're like, all right, we have nothing going on. Let's just put in like, this is going to be Christmas's bit. This is going to be Ian's bit. I don't know. I like the fact that they're like, let's just give them something that the audience will like a Christmas jingle every time she speaks. I don't know. It's funny. And also watching them like use the same, like they all the reality TV shows have the same exact score, like Kitchen Nightmare, Shark Tank. It's always the same. Zoom in. Whang. It's great. I love it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Big Brother also is one of those, I think, that really hammers in that trope where every time someone's name is mentioned, it'll go boom and then cut to that person. Or even when someone says my alliance, it'll cut to like all six people in that alliance with these sound effects. I mean, if you're talking about the interesting tactics that the BB edit makes, this is an interesting week for you to come on because we had a very outside production element influence this week. And we got to see last episode on Thursday night's episode, like the way they tried to really tell that story as that Ian has this octopus epiphany just pop out of his head with nothing whatsoever influencing him behind the scenes or even over the wall.
Yeah, Mike, I have no idea like what you're talking about right now. Ian is for sure like like a mastermind. He knew the whole time. He just like it just took him a little bit, but like to vocalize it. But no, trust me, Ian knew the whole time for sure. Like obviously, right? I mean, yeah, no one was nothing.
I mean,
happened.
Yeah. Well, they can never hide anything like that, you know. Like, come on, it's reality TV, which means it's 100% real. So they're never. Come on.
Yeah. We know Ian for he's always just very, very intuitive with stuff like this. Yeah.
Oh, especially when he gets together with Kevin, like, my God, look out. Like the library is full because those guys have reads for days.
Well, yeah, but it's like, no, the reads for days, but it's like the encyclopedia that's, you know, 30 years old at this point. And so a lot of things are out of date. Like, yes, but also no.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about what this President Reagan might be up to. This is I think I've truly got my finger on the pulse here. And you could tell I feel like the edit, again, speaking towards that perspective of things. I don't know. Maybe this is a bit of like confirmation bias. It seems to me like they're starting to kind of paint Kevin as a little aloof, right? Like, I think the Sunday episode was when he was talking about, oh, my tarot cards are sometimes upside down. Or like after the nomination episode, he's like, I don't know how this happened. Like, I'm usually so good at detecting this stuff. So I don't know if we're going to full out get a sequence of just Kevin having legendarily bad takes, but it does feel like they're skewing that way. Sort of like what they did with Memphis a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, you mean in terms of like setting him up to be the like boyoing kind of like fall guy, right? For all of the incorrect.
Yeah, they're really the boyoing guy.
Yeah, you know, they always have one every season. I believe that's the vernacular that's used.
Yeah, I'm not really sure just what happened with Kevin in general. I feel like he was never usually like this, but now I feel like at this point, like in the second half of the season, they should just play him for laughs. Every time he says anything, it's kind of like an ironic character almost. Like, I have no idea what you're even talking about right now. I don't get it at all.
Well, this is a very interesting week to talk about because, again, I think while the outcome was set in stone, basically the moment Enzo rolled that third ball into its hole, there was a lot of stuff going on, both on the shows and on the feeds. We'll see how much that sets up, considering that, speaking of jingle bells, Christmas is now taking up residence in the HOH room. But Liana, what have been your thoughts on the way that Big Brother progressed in week four, considering what happened and what's to come?
Right. So, you know, there's been a lot of comparisons, and I'm pretty sure this started in week three of like old school versus new school. And what does that mean? What is new school gameplay look like? What does old school gameplay look like? And I think what we're seeing in terms of the new school play is something that is much more subtle. And that's what happened this week. This week, the game was afoot, right? Like everything was going on. It just so happened that things were much more subtle in terms of how the gameplay was happening. The seeds that were being planted, the relationships that were being cultivated, all of it was so much more subtle, so much more under the radar than what may be considered old school Big Brother, where relationships were very much out in the forefront. And I think this week sort of encapsulated the difference between old school versus new school.
Mm. Yeah, I think that like, Big Brother, obviously Big Brother has evolved. And so I think before this season, all of us were saying like, this is All Stars. All these people have played the game before. They know what to do. We're going to see gameplay like we never have before. Big Brother 22 is going to be the next evolution of the game. And I think it has been, but maybe not in the way that we want, where the people are playing really well, and they're playing subtly, and you know, it's not as fun to watch, I guess, a little bit. But it still is a great evolution of the game. And,
I think it's interesting because I don't want to connotate, you know, what old school and new school gameplay is. But I guess if I have to broad brush it, it seems to me like old school is appropriated with more short term gameplay and new school is more about long term gameplay, where I really feel like one of the reasons why this majority has succeeded in a certain manner speaking is because they've kind of set up a hit list, right? They've set up rings within rings. And so they know, like, okay, if and when we win next week, this is who we get rid of. Whereas old school gameplay, maybe this is why Janelle and Kaser were all about shaking things up the first few weeks, was definitely more about like, yeah, you know what, let's just get through this week and then we'll see who wins HOH and then we'll go from there. Even again, in the OG Big Brother All-Stars, even when the season six or C6 was in power, it felt still like a bit flighty. You know, I don't think James was sitting up there in the HOH week two with Kaser being like, I can't wait to go after Chicken George next week. It seemed like really, depending on the HOH whims that particular week, they would put two people up. And I think that's sort of what we got in the form of Memphis in week two, right? He still personified that of, okay, there was a plan from the rest of his alliance, but he said, nope, this is my week. I'm the HOH. I want to do what's in my own self-interest. And so I think it does end up sort of breaking down by those lines. I guess through that lens, I'm not entirely sure if we do connect this back to, you know, Derek and the bomb squad slash detonators, as many people have done, including that article from TV Guide. But I think that's sort of how I have been seeing it now from the past few weeks, that maybe it's less old school versus new school and more so like nearsighted versus farsighted, in a manner of speaking.
I think it's that, and I think it's also the alliance structure itself. So I think when you talk about, you know, what does modern Big Brother look like in the past couple of seasons, it is a Big Brother. Okay. Big Brother at its core is about being in the best position with as many people as possible, meaning that you have close ties to as many people in the house. So the way to optimize that is to have all of these sort of Venn diagram alliances to put you in the best position with everybody else. And so if that is the optimal strategy, then it makes sense that you would want to try to have these almost Venn diagram concentric circle alliances. So I think it is both playing for long term, meaning you have all of these barriers, you're in the core, you have all of these other circles spread out from you, so that allows for the long-term gameplay. But in order to have that long-term gameplay, you have to have those sort of concentric circle Venn diagram alliances, which is why when Janelle and Kaser are saying, hey, I will offer you 2 weeks of safety, like that's not going to cut it. That's just not something that seems to be optimal gameplay, at least with the way that the strategy of Big Brother has evolved.
Yeah, I think that is also what is a little bit frustrating about the whole thing is that like people have been saying the last few months like this, you know, Onion Alliance strategy is just the correct way to play, and everyone is playing kind of like it's the best way to play, which is why I think that like Big Brother should have like really reconsider just the whole structure of the game. I feel like if we did go back to like a Celebrity Big Brother, like a 3 week thing, because now the seasons are like 100 days. So like you were saying, Mike, it's the long game. But like, what if we did just think about this? What if instead of like a full 3 month game, we just watched like 3 1-month games or something like that? You know what I mean? Where people are playing really fast and, you know, it's like a little bit more messy, a little bit more sloppy, but maybe it'll be a little bit more fun to watch. I'm not sure. But it's just something.
All right. No, I like this. Okay, so we're going to do a 1 month game of Big Brother. If you win, you get the prize. If you finish as runner up, you stay in the house and then the next group of people move in.
No. we learned that lesson from Paul. No.
Well, it's going to be Paul.
Yeah, will only be Paul.
Do the other people know that person was the runner up of the game or no? Do they go in? Like, were they quarantined for a whole month and then they just walk in?
Yeah, they were kept in the BB basement for the entire month. So they got like led up from the basement and now they don't know what's going on. They've been literally living in the dark for an entire month.
Yeah, but then you have the third group. Are they going to be in the Big Brother attic? So then you like bring the group down, bring the group up.
Yeah, really, it's going to be like an upstairs downstairs thing where these people are going to be quarantined in two different levels of the house, and then they all just sort of swap places depending on when they play.
This is becoming more like that Fox show Utopia. If it's just like every single month, like just new people come in. We're Big Brother all year long. Like we just watch feeds all year, and there's just winners every single month.
There we go. Listen, it's better than we could make it happen. I think we could look to shake up the formula. Well, let's start getting into our B&B fair here, and let's get into our preseason predictions off of the guy who left this week and really, I don't know why I was going to say lit his butt on fire, but I guess he lit a trail behind him. I think that's where I was coming from. Let's talk
Does
about
that even make sense. What does that mean?
Like he lit a match and then like left fire in his wake or something. That's the image I'm coming up with, but it somehow landed on lit his butt on fire. Let's not fixate on it.
Is that a super comic?
Oh yeah,
name,
not
Mike?
To spoil things.
Fire butt,
probably old fire butt. No,
that's Memphis. That's Memphis. Somehow, I don't know. Like old fire butt, old fire butt over there. I had feeds on this morning, and he's just like he's grumpy in the mornings. His co-host has left, and he's just sitting there like a Sith Lord with his hood up, just like being all fire butt in the kitchen. Oh, Memphis.
Oh, Memphis. Well, we'll have a lot to say about fire, but later on. But Liana Kaser was, I think, one of the very popularly fawned after names going into this, considering how long ago he played, maybe second only to Janelle. What was your take on him preseason?
So I was so, so excited to see Kaser come back for a third season. I thought, look, Janelle is going to be in there. Janelle is going to take the brunt of the target first. He's going to go a little bit further. Just to temper expectations, however, for this, I was a little less excited and optimistic. So I did say that Kaser would be pre-jury.
Of course, it's Kaser.
It's Kaser. He's Mr. Pre-jury himself. Thank you, Cody. And I said that, look, we all love Kaser, but he just can't help himself. He's going to play too hard, too messy, too quickly, and will become a big target. But I also said that he would be the sweetest person on the season. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but he would be assigned a punishment randomly, and his comic book name would be Laser Kaser.
That's pretty good. Like Jedi Janie, something like that. There's kind
yeah,
of
like a robot, yeah. Maybe like a Borg with like lasers coming out of his eyes. He does stare very intently when he gets into those strategy conversations.
Yeah, exactly. That's clearly what I was going for.
Well, I had the hope that Kaser would be able to just like inch his way over the finish line and that he'd be the first or second juror. I didn't have a high hope for him, but I'm like, all right, if we're going to have a season to break the curse, he's got to come back for this third time. I said, we'll get a sequence of him explaining things to people only for them to be confused by what he said in the DR, which I think has been more appropriate to Ian. Like the, I'm going to explain something confusing and then cut to people in the DR saying, what? With probably a little boy-o-yoing after it. I said that in true Kaser fashion, he would win at least one comp in the first 3 weeks, and he will have a surprisingly goofy moment caught on the feeds. And though he won't wear the FBI hat, he'll have another piece of wardrobe that becomes iconic, which I guess he didn't have. Maybe the NASA shirt.
He also had these little blue shorts that were quite the hot topic.
Is that some thing that his wife had to put out a statement about?
Yeah, I think that's what it was about.
But my superhero name for him was Kaser the Number Cruncher. And it was off of Cody mispronouncing his name in the premiere as Kaser.
Oh yes, okay, great. So does he have like an abacus?
Yeah, exactly.
In his comic,
and he's like throwing letter, throwing numbers,
throwing letters.
He's a letters can be math too.
That is true. That is true.
I really thought the superhero, I mean, we'll see, but like, it might be something like that has to do with the FBI or something like that. But Maybe. I have no idea.
I mean, he did put on the FBI hat in this episode, in this past episode when he gets evicted, or right before, I guess, he gets evicted, which I had never seen on the feed. So I think he was just like hiding that somewhere.
Like in his bag or something like that. Like,
yeah, just maybe production, to pull it out.
Maybe that production gave it to him, like right before he was evicted. Like, all right, just put this on. The fans will go crazy because they know. They know who we like. You know what I mean? They're just like, all right. Please take this.
You think he like tried to get it past wardrobe and they held on to it until this moment happened because they didn't want to spoil the moment anytime beforehand? So I guess that means, do you think that when Nicole Franzel gets evicted, they'll like put the germitard onto her? They've been holding on to it the entire time. Ian has the dog costume.
They'll do the germitard and they'll also have the frog costume over it too. It'll just be great. It'll be public humiliation for Nicole. Be fantastic.
I mean, we already count public humiliation for Nicole's last night's speech. So this is just icing on the cake.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about that speech a lot because I was, you know, very much enjoyed being on the recap last night, but I don't think I had time to really like sit and think about it for a while because when, you know, he Kesar gives the speech that everyone always wants, right? Like he's going to blow everything up. But because Kesar is just so chill with the way that he communicates, like I remember thinking, this is a huge deal. What is going on? But yet because he's so casual with how he communicates, it's just like, yeah, there's a love triangle, blah, blah, blah. It's like, wait, but you're blowing up the house right now. Oh, crap.
Yeah, I love it, though, because I feel like he has that almost gives him like a surety to his tone. And I think that's also another reason why maybe people thought he was dangerous was because like he talks with a lot of confidence. You know, when he does speak, he speaks with that gravity to it. So, you know, if he sort of like was a bit more, I don't know, shrill about it, it would be more energetic, but it wouldn't land with as much of a punch. But man, that Cody reaction in particular, coupled with the Danny and Nicole hug reactions, like that just made this, that might have been just been the best episode of the season just for that like 5 minute chunk alone.
Yeah, although it would have been hilarious if we saw Kesar just scream that entire speech. If he was, for the first time, Kesar, he put on the black FBI hat and then he said, okay, this is exactly what is happening. Everyone would have lost their minds.
Yeah, well, I want to see like the prison mic version of Kesar, like the character he puts on, FBI Kesar.
FBI Kesar. Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Should he have put the FBI hat on before he gave the speech, or do you think it was better that he waited until after?
He should have put it on before and being like, all right, guys, I've actually been working for the FBI this whole time. I was tapping in, doing some surveillance, and you know what? Here's exactly what's going on. And then he'll just be able to.
Yeah, well,
that.
I think what Kesar could have done is he could have said, like, look, I have a lot of intel about what's going on, because I know someone in the FBI. Hey, everyone, my name's Sam Wilkerson. I'm in the FBI. This is what's going on.
Very Burt Macklin.
I was just about to say Burt Macklin, like throwing stuff everywhere. Well, apparently, so at the time of recording this, I actually just posted my exit interview with Kesar. And apparently he told me that while everyone was getting up to vote, apparently him and Cody got into like a little bit of a tiff, or not a tiff as much as like a sarcastic comment off where Cody was getting up to vote and Kesar's like, vote your heart, Cody. And Cody's like, oh, you're delusional. You're just so delusional. And it's so it seemed like, you know, Kesar, I think, believes that Cody didn't take things personally. They sort of gave the good game pat. But I don't know. It seemed like Cody was a little riled up in that moment. I would have loved to. Maybe we'll see a part of that conversation on Sunday, because I know they sometimes like to show what happens in between things.
I'm so excited for Cody to enter poly mode where he's just completely unhinged. He's just like, he thinks he has it all together and it's all going to work out. But then he's just going to go off the rails. He's going to be talking smack about everybody. It's coming. It's coming. We just got to wait a little bit longer.
I know a lot of people don't like Polly Calafiore for numerous reasons, but he is one of my favorite reality TV show contestants because of the character that he is. So I, for one, Phil, would be very excited for that to happen because, oh my gosh, it would just bring me so much joy. And for some reason, I'm also now just thinking that Cody and Polly mode would be like, oh, female body inspector, like something like that. I don't know.
Oh, imagine like he says, instead of taking out his FBI hat, he has a female body inspector shirt and it tries to also take on his FBI character.
Yeah.
Because Polly Polly for me is like, if Cody was on like a sitcom, right? Polly is like the season 8, like Flanderized version of Cody. You know what I mean? Like,
where yeah, they're like, oh, wow, then Big Brother really jumped the shark when they really did, like, that Cody character took a real turn around the fourth or fifth time we saw him.
He's like the complete caricature, you know?
That's so true, though. It definitely feels that way. And then, of course, they did like a spinoff, right? That's the challenge. So the Polly Cody character gets sent over there.
Oh my goodness. All right, well, let's start getting into our games, and we've got a lot of actually, like, on a Polly note, crazy kooky things to talk about this week. So Liana, get us started.
Yes. Okay. So the very first game that we are going to play, this was given to me by Anne on Twitter. So thank you so much for submitting this game. And it is called Audience Avatar. So it is up to the two of you. We'll alternate back and forth, but you have to guess whether or not a quote was either said by Kacer in the DR or our very own Amon Adwin on Twitter.
Ooh.
Yes. So the answer is either going to be Amon or Kacer. And obviously these are all quotes about Big Brother 22.
Wow, this is interesting, because maybe I just have Puya on the brain, because Puya is such a huge Kacer fan. I would assume it would be Kacer or Puya. But now the more that I think about it, the more I do think that, like, I think Kacer and Amon do sort of have like a similar temperament and way of thinking about the game, that this might be harder than initially expected.
Well, we will have to see, to make it also, of course, fair a little bit harder. But Anne changed all of the identifying names and pronouns to make them less specific to the person speaking. So just so y'all know. All righty. Let's go ahead and start things off. Mike, I'll give you the first quote. And the first quote is, "It just doesn't sit right in my soul that Janelle will leave before Nicole. That's not how this should work."
Oh, okay. This is already so hard out of the gate, because I could feel like both of them would say that, right? That, again, talking about that gravity, both of them are Sarah Bareilles bringing that gravity. I'm going to say, I don't know if Kacer would say it hurts me in my soul. I'm going to go with Amon.
That is correct. Yes, that one was an Amon tweet.
Also, I really got you with that Sarah Bareilles reference. I hit you right in where the white girl hits you.
That is the first and only time I'm sure I will hear a Sarah Bareilles joke on a podcast. But I appreciate you, Mike. This is why we're podcasters. Okay, Phil, this next quote is for you.
All right.
Tyler won the HOH fair and square. I don't expect them to deviate from the plan.
Oh, that's for sure, Kacer. Like, right, because he says, all right, wait, am I right?
Yes, you're right. You're like, wait, I don't want to dig myself into a hole with my explanation if I'm wrong. So can you confirm for me? Yes, you are correct, Phil.
Just him saying deviate. You know, that's just how Kacer is. Like, I do not want them to deviate. You know, I don't even, like, who else would say that in the house but Kacer?
Yeah. I also remember that I think people were pointing it out because there was that whole quote-unquote controversy that Tyler rang in with the beer steins before his mug hit the end of it, and so they were saying maybe his HOH should be revoked, and so that was sort of like, wait, was Kacer making a call out to us that he actually did win fair and square?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, exactly. So that was definitely a Kacer quote. Mike, let's see if you can guess this next one. They know that they have very limited options, so I'm hoping that Memphis, who's a comp beast, wins and chooses to use his plus one on either Janelle or Kacer.
Amon is not calling Memphis a comp beast. I have to go with Kacer here.
Yeah, that is true. Amon would never give that much credit to Memphis.
Like, I feel like if he did, it would be in quotations, and it just did not feel like it was an ironic name calling for Memphis.
Mm-hmm. All right, Phil, this one's for you. Here's the good news. They can't take everyone out at once. Somebody is going to come back pissed after this.
You know, I think it is Amon. Am I correct?
No, I'm sorry. Oh, that one was Kacer.
Wow.
Yes.
I thought it was Amon as well.
I don't know. Pissed. That's like Amon's favorite word. You know, that's Paul's favorite word. But I still did not expect, you know, Kacer would be throwing around that like
yeah,
that.
I don't think I didn't. Maybe that shows that Kacer really hasn't watched that much Modern Big Brother. He can just use pissed without like making a reference to it.
Well, I will say one of the difficult parts of this is the fact that you have both Kacer as Kacer in the DR and Kacer as trying to perform some of the lines that Big Brother has graciously given to him, including ones like, I'm doing this for America.
Oh, I read the video. I'm doing this for BB Nation.
Yeah.
No, I actually heard that like, when production was casting the season, they, you know, they thought Paul was going to be on. So they wrote all these Paul lines out. And so then they're like, oh, Paul's not coming. We'll bring in Kacer. They're like, all right, Kacer, just read this right here.
Yeah, the direct substitute for Paul is Kacer. Exactly. Being like, things are very gumpy right now. Not friendship.
I mean, essentially the same. The one for one for one. Okay.
BP.
KK always pulls through. Comes through. Nope. All right.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors. And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on.
Mike, we're going to go ahead and go back to you. I'm extremely irritated, but I'm successful because I'm relentless. I take my disappointment, my frustration, and sometimes my anger, and I channel them into what I want.
I feel like that's a Kacer thing. I think Amon is very self-affirming, but I don't think that self-affirming has to like, I'm angry, but I'm going to weaponize this into something. And that does feel like something. Kacer is all about like pumping himself up, whether prompted by the DR or not. So that feels very Kacer-y to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is correct. That one is also a Kacer quote. Phil, this is going to hell in a handbasket.
Ooh, man. All right. I do think that that is a line they fed Kacer. Am I correct? No!
No! No, I'm sorry. That was an Amon quote. That's hard, right? Because it does definitely sound like one
somehow
that they
Kacer
would feed
could be able to sell hell in a handbasket.
I really thought I was trying to do the reverse psychology thing, where it's like, oh, that sounds like an Amon thing, but production fed that. But
All right. Well, don't worry. We still have a couple questions left. You can definitely catch up to Mike. Mike, this quote is for you. They better not keep us waiting till kingdom come this time. We deserve to be put out of our misery swiftly if this veto doesn't go our way.
That's Amon. That is Amon. I can visualize the tweet in my mind. Those 140 characters. That is Amon.
Yes, that is Amon. Okay. All right. Phil, we're going back to you. Memphis has proven to be a bit erratic with his decision making in the house. This could go wrong in a number of ways.
So I do think that okay, oh, dang it, I want to catch up to you, Mike, so bad. I'm going to say that is Kacer, because I do think that, you know, Kacer still did have a little bit of trust for Memphis, and so he just a little bit confused by Memphis's motives. And I feel like Amon would know Memphis's motives. Okay, please tell me I'm correct. Please.
I have the utmost pleasure of telling you, yes, you are correct. That is the correct logic. That is definitely something that Kacer said and totally fits. Amon, again, would never even say anything close to remotely that nice about Memphis. Okay, Mike, we're going to go back to you. No, Kacer, you need to off. Nope, that one doesn't even make sense. So we're going to go ahead and skip that one because, okay, Mike, this is your quote.
Was this Kacer like Gollum-ing in that 1 second, like just talking to Kacer himself?
Yeah. All right. There was a greater chance that the global pandemic would be resolved rather than Kacer not going up on the blood. No, that doesn't make any sense
Kacer
either.
I think Kacer also said that too, by the way.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay. So, I'm out of questions.
Oh, okay.
Because I used them up. It was a close in, though. So, Phil, you're only 2 points behind Mike. But, Mike, you have taken the win here. You have correctly identified the Kaser versus Amon quotes. So I guess congratulations.
Did I technically Christmas this and that, like, everything just fell apart at the end and I somehow won this thing?
I think that's really what it was. Much like the button comp, the less or the fewer should have been fewer, or the running competition as well, that Christmas won because everyone else threw it. I think that might have been the situation, Mike.
I'm down to win by a fluke. You know, let's do one more. Let's find out one more question for me to win or something like that.
You're like, let's do a winner take all type situation.
Yeah, exactly. One question for all the marbles. So before we get into our next game, I want to go back to the Memphis topic here, because, again, I want to go back to this edit discussion, because I have been so intrigued by the Memphis of it all, because I will still affirm that I think they edited him as being one of the worst HOHs with week two. But I think, like, I'm still trying to figure out why the show is A, referencing the committee so much for an alliance that does not exist, and B, has Julie Chen Moonves every week being like, look what Memphis has done. See the faces behind us. So, Liana, especially as someone who watches the live feeds, what have been your thoughts about the discrepancy between, like, Memphis on the show versus Memphis on the feeds for the past month?
I mean, okay, the first maybe week two, because Memphis was HOH, that edit kind of made sense. But after that, this doesn't make sense at all. Although I do notice there's a discrepancy between Julie Chen, Moonves, of course, and the edited show, because it felt like the Sunday and the Wednesday episodes were very much like the Slick Six, no mention of Memphis. And then all of a sudden we get to the exit interview with Kaser and Julie Chen is like, and Memphis put together the whole alliance. Like the Sunday, Wednesday episodes didn't even talk about the committee at all.
I think a big part of it is just Julie wants to see the reaction. You know, she's an interviewing someone. She wants to see Janelle and she wants to see Kaser act shocked. Like, cause it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if Memphis isn't even, you know, running the show. She wants to convince Kaser and Janelle that Memphis is running the show so they can be like, oh my God. Oh my God. I feel so betrayed. You know what I mean? She wants the big TV moment.
She wants the face crack under the mask, ironically enough. Like, you can't see them actually react to it.
Yeah.
But it's like her information is so old. Like, no one could have bothered to get her a new cue card that says, like, oh, no, actually, that's not what's happening anymore. No one takes the committee seriously, especially Memphis. Like, no one respects Memphis as a game player. Oh, my goodness.
It's really interesting. Watching that. Maybe it's because, and I think we've talked about this a bit with Big Brother Canada 6. I know that my thoughts about, you know, why the edit was so vastly different from the feeds was because it's really tough to edit and streamline a very complicated game. And so they're like, if you have a big group, it's really easy. Again, we cut to their faces every time they're mentioned. So maybe because the committee was the first of these big groups, it's just easy to focus around. Also, there was so much other Memphis stuff. He had probably the largest hat I've ever seen in my life in when he was hosting the veto competition. That is legitimately the top of all top hats. It was a good 2 feet tall. And I was so fixated on that hat the entire time. It was so big.
I feel like Memphis is like, just like the entire game, he's like half asleep. He's like, what? Yeah, I'll just throw this on, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. You know what I mean? He's just like, yeah, I'll do this. Sure. I guess this is what I'm here to do. You know what? Even though he's a little bit reluctant, he also just doesn't care. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Memphis is so grumpy all the time. He's been complaining about, oh, the lights are too bright. I'm going to go get floodlights and shine them in the houses of the production members that are shining lights in my face. Memphis, it's so unnecessary. So to see him, Mike, in the largest hat we've ever seen in a veto competition as the magician doing this whole bit was just absolutely hilarious. And knowing that his back was injured, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw in the HOH competition on Thursday, he's like hunched over, kind of like hobbling up the stage to get to the booth. You know, obviously he's in better shape now, but Oh, goodness. Memphis is quite a character.
I don't know when he pulled his back. Maybe he was riding high on something for that veto competition, you know? Like, pop him full a couple pills, like, hey, how's this? Come on out.
Wasn't that what he does when he, like, busts out of the
He pulls pulled like a James Hewling. He's like, what are you doing? And basically tries to, like, freak everybody out by kicking down the door and screaming at everybody before, like, going back to grandpa mode.
You know, I think, like, as, like, my favorite contestants start to dwindle, I think I'm going to just start to love Memphis after a while. Just because, like, you know, he's not, he's kind of, like an ironic Big Brother player. We're a little bit, where, like, we all know he's not going to make the right decision. But at the same time, like, he's just a little bit funny. He's a little bit, like, why are you even here? Why is he just sitting on the chair, grumpy, drinking his coffee and just like cold as hell and complaining about everything? Like, it's kind of like, who put this guy here? He's kind of morphed into Jerry or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. He does have very Jerry-esque energy. And I feel like the morning talk show as well, that whole segment, I was just laughing the whole time with Memphis's deadpan.
Okay, Memphis is like the worst talk show host. Like, you want like your Al Roker or like your Hoda Kotb. And imagine if you're watching a talk show and here comes Memphis, like, hello everybody, welcome to the news. The news is the lights are too bright, it's too cold. Back to you, Kacer.
Yeah, this is no welcome to the view, welcome to the view, welcome to the view type moment, right? Just not here for it.
It's like the exact opposite of like the Eric Andre show where he's like really into it. Kacer is, it's the first ever talk show I've ever seen where the host doesn't even want to be there. like the late Letterman days or something like that.
Yeah, the Eric Andre comparison is hilarious, though, because there's so many memes with the Eric Andre, like when he, you know, this is all the committee's fault, you know, like with the gun turned around.
Well, very fitting. I'm going to give an excited welcome here because we have a very special guest crashing the middle of this. Get ready for a takeover. Rob Sestrino has joined the B&B.
What? That I heard I wanted to be a part of the Memphis talk show. Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Do you know that often in the B&B, Mike and Liana are playing some games?
Just as informative.
Pray to your mama that they're not super lame. Why do you have to pray that are people worried that the games are going to be super lame on the B&B?
I guess so. I don't know.
Depending on how you feel, they've always been lame, or they haven't. So really, lame is a very subjective term. But we have brought Rob here in the middle of this podcast because when Liana and I talked about playing this particular game, Rob wanted in.
I had FOMO.
And as the architect of the B&B, I think it's only appropriate that we bring him on because Phil, we couldn't let the opportunity pass by here for a genuine film expert to not have the opportunity to talk about the resume of one Cody Calafiore, actor extraordinaire.
Oh, boy. The long, you know, I think he's going to win an Oscar in 10 years. I really think it's going to happen. He's going to go down as one of the greatest.
I think he's more likely to nab a role named Oscar than turn an Oscar anytime in the next 10 years.
All right, so here's gonna EGOT all over the place. Yeah, okay,
maybe the EGOT if all the everything is like a commercial or something like that, the Oscars commercials or whatever. Yeah.
Well, maybe actually though, he could be the first BBGOT, the first EGOT plus a Big Brother winner.
More like the Zingot.
Take that, Whoopi. Nobody's ever done that before. All right, so here's what's gonna happen.
Welcome to the view.
I've spent way too much time looking through Cody's IMDb and various projects, and I've assembled a list of multiple choice questions about his film career so far. So we're just going to go around the horn between the three of you. I do have some clips from trailers of upcoming Cody Calafiore projects. Suffice it to say, look, say what you want to about the guy. He has found work. I will not qualify the work, but he has found work, and we're gonna take a deep dive into this work and see how it compares. You know, he did not have a great week this past week, but maybe he had some better weeks in the past on screen.
I'm so happy.
I'm so excited. Thank you, Mike and Liana, for letting me be here. And Phil, thank you for letting me crash your B&B episode.
Hey, this is amazing. I'm super excited to do this.
All right. Well, Liana, let's start with you here. So again, this is just going to be a straight up multiple choice question. How many acting credits does Cody Calafiore have on his IMDb profile? A, 10, B, 16, C, 20, D, 26.
All right, so this is only acting credits.
Only acting,
so
not as self.
Okay, because that would be obviously his Big Brother appearances. All right, I think I'm going to go with Hugh's original season was BB16. Let's go with B16.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that connection, but that is indeed correct. He has had 16 credits, including Stuff to Come, stuff that is not out yet. And a couple of times he also appeared on The Bold and the Beautiful as well by a character named Cody, but not as himself.
Yeah,
that's where the BB got comes from. It's actually Bold and the Beautiful.
All right, let's go to you, Phil. The vast majority of projects that Cody has worked on have been directed by one person. What is that person's name?
Derek.
Yes, well, you'd think so. But no, if that's the case, Nicole Franzel would probably get more work, too. All right. A, Edwina Wood.
Oh,
B,
boy.
Tanya Wiseau. C, Candy Kane. D, Dana DeCocteau.
I am going to go with Dana DeCocteau. Am I correct?
You are not. Dana DeCocteau is a female version of David DeCocteau, who directed Santa's Summer House. The correct answer is most of Cody's career has been supplemented by a woman who legitimately goes by the legal name of Candy Kane. She has been the one responsible for Cody's fame on screen. Thank you, Candy Kane.
You can address all letters of complaint to Candy Kane,
who assumedly lives at the North Pole.
It's like the next Hitchcock and Jimmy Stewart or something like that. Like, there's going to be match made in heaven. They're going to go down and continue making great work.
Well, she comes from a prestigious line of great actors that her dad, Michael, is an incredible actor. So that it's, it runs in the family.
Yes, I believe Cody's slated to be in the Cider House Rules 2 coming up very soon on Roku, on Quibi.
He's actually going to be doing the Michael Caine accent the whole time. I saw him practice it in the house in the live feeds. You know, needs a little bit more work. But,
I'm calling a house meeting. I'm a dinosaur now. All right, let's get into. We're getting into Cody's resume specifically now. So, Rob, Cody's first major project is a film called What Happened Last Night,
yes,
in which Cody plays a very jolly frat bro. So in the role of a lifetime. So I've watched the trailer for What Happened Last Night, and I'm going to give you four things. Cody in the trailer did three of these things. He did not do one thing. So give me the one thing that Cody did not do in the trailer for What Happened Last Night as Joe the frat bro. A, pulling on his shirt and calling it, quote, boyfriend material. B, a secret handshake that involves making an elephant trunk and noise. C, celebrating a touchdown half-heartedly. D, playing beer pong with Amber Rose.
Okay. Good question. I think... can I hear the choices one more time?
Sure. So did Cody not, A, pull on his shirt and call himself boyfriend material?
Yes.
B, do a secret handshake that involves making an elephant trunk and corresponding sound. C, celebrate a touchdown half-heartedly.
Yeah.
And D, play beer pong with Amber Rose.
So I believe Amber Rose is in the film. I've seen the poster for this. So I'm going to say it's the elephant trunk.
I'm sorry, that is indeed the secret handshake of the Gammas, the frat that exists in What Happened Last Night. No, unfortunately, Cody did not do the always important line of pulling on his shirt and calling it boyfriend material.
Oh, come on!
But there's a really fun moment. I think my favorite has to be C, celebrating the touchdown, because literally it's like four guys sitting on a couch and they all like in unison just stand up and go, touchdown, yay! Like they're robots? It's so strange.
Oh, they were watching a football game.
Yeah, but then they got a touchdown. But instead of, you know, celebrating, they just, it was almost if like church had gotten out and they like all just stood up to stretch their legs or something.
It's like, it's like the jury section in Big Brother where it looks like they're like watching the tape like live, even though it's always just like pre-recorded being like, oh, wow. Wow, Davon won veto or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Get Cody for the Masked Singer, Liana. He'd be perfect as one of those audience plugs.
Can't wait.
You can do the elephant trunk.
That's it. Right. That's something that I do need to see what exactly that handshake was like. I don't remember if, you know, if Derek and Cody ever had any type of handshake, but I'd like to think that they were inspired by one another.
Well, don't worry. The handshake makes its way into another piece of media because we'll talk about that in just a second. We're going to talk about Cody's fellow frat bro, because what happened last night alongside Cody stars someone who might be familiar to people who watch the Disney Channel, specifically in the early 2000s. Liana, which former Disney Channel star also appears in What Happened Last Night? A, Ricky Ullman, a.k.a. Phil from Phil of the Future. B, Clayton Snyder, a.k.a. Ethan Kraft from Lizzie McGuire. C, A.J. Troth, a.k.a. Twitty from Even Stevens. Or D, Orlando Brown from That's So Raven as the role of Eddie.
So it's not Amber Rose.
Okay. Amber Rose was not a Disney Channel star, I believe.
Yes. Okay, gotcha. I have absolutely no idea. I do remember watching Phil of the Future, so that's going to be my answer.
You looked into the future and did not get the correct outcome. It is Clayton Snyder, dumb Ethan Kraft. From Lizzie McGuire, who ended up starring who was the star of What Happened Last Night.
Phil, did you know that?
I had no idea, although that makes a lot of sense. I feel like this movie was rejected by Walmart for the bargain bin. They didn't even want anything to do with it. This cast sounds horrible.
Well, don't worry, because What Happened Last Night was so wildly successful, it earned a spin-off TV series.
Are you kidding me?
What?
Yeah, no. It is currently on Amazon, but it has a different name.
They recast Cody?
No. Cody is a star. He's still a part of it as Joe the Frat Bro. But Phil, what is the name of this spinoff series? A, What Happened Last Year? B, Hearts and Frats? C, Walk of Shame? D, New Dogs, Old Tricks?
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to say it was I feel like with Amazon, with TV shows, they want that really just catchy title. So I'm going to go with B. What is it? Like Frats and
Hearts and Frats?
Hearts and Frats. I feel
well,
like
there's nothing catchier than Hearts and Frats. What an idiom.
Well, I hate to break your heart and not your frat. That is incorrect. No, the spinoff is named New Dogs, Old Tricks, which has nothing to do with the name of the movie it's spun off of, despite featuring the exact same characters.
It's like they got a computer to like literally I bet they literally did get a computer to watch the show.
It is Amazon.
Generate, whatever title.
I just don't understand, though, because like at least have it be related to college. New Dogs Old Tricks says nothing about like college life.
Wait, you said it was a spinoff.
Yes.
So but is it,
or I guess a TV sequel series, I guess we can call it.
So is it the same actors and the same characters?
Yep.
Oh, but they're still in college.
Yep.
Is it a sequel? Like, is it, or did they remake the movie? Or do you have to watch the movie to watch New Dogs Old Tricks? How would you know?
Is it part of the extended What Happened Last Night universe?
Yeah, exactly. You know, someone's Clayton Snyder's going to walk on and be like, oh, no, you don't understand. He's actually a character from What Happened Last Night, and he actually has an important role with Joe. You need to understand the canon in order to really get into New Dogs Old Tricks.
How many seasons of New Dogs Old Tricks?
Currently two.
Two. Wow. Would a better name have been New Dogs Old Guy?
Oh, if only. Though I know a couple people that would have been really angry that Amazon could have stolen the title away from them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wait, GOG. For season three, if they're shooting that, like, how are they going to explain where Joe the Frat Bro went? Like, what
they're
going
to say he probably went onto a reality show, but they're going to do some sort of stupid name for it. Like, oh, a large uncle. Joe's going on it, so I guess he won't be on this season.
They let him out of college. He took a semester off to go play Candy Crush. It's fine.
Yeah. But how is he on New Dog's Old Tricks, but also in the Big Brother house? I don't get it.
Yeah. Was that Candy Crush or Candy Cane?
Directed by Candy Cane. Candy Crush directed by Candy Cane.
Yeah,
it's within the larger Candy Cane thematic universe, Rob.
Yes.
Does Candy Cane have anything to do with the show, Mike?
Oh, yeah. She wrote it and directed it. This is a Candy Cane helmed vehicle, Phil.
Mm-hmm. This is really auteur work.
Ironically,
right,
probably a Candy Cane truck that is her vehicle. All right. So, Rob, surprisingly, another Big Brother alum plays a recurring role on New Dog's Old Tricks.
Yes.
Who is that Big Brother alum? Is it A, Jesse Godders, B, Austin Maddelson, C, Hayden Moss, D, Frankie Grande?
It's A, Jesse.
That is correct. Mr. Spectacular is on New Dog's Old Tricks.
I knew this because that I had been talking about some of Jesse's social media postings, which do not seem to necessarily match up with a guy whose whole thing is that he's in the gym all the time, he's wrestling, but yet somehow he's always like tweeting about ratings and overnights from Big Brother and posting very generic comments on Instagram. And somebody had sent me yesterday that Jesse commented on the YouTube comments for one of these movies. So I knew that Jesse had to be somewhere in the Candy Cane extended universe.
Yes. So unfortunately, I don't know. I haven't seen New Dog's Old Tricks. I may have to check it out just to see Jesse Godders like not act like Mr. Spectacular. Assuming so. Who knows? Maybe Candy Cane just gave him a different name like Evan, but still put him in like a Speedo and just flexing his muscles in every shot.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. He's not wearing sleeves or pants.
If two Big Brother players are on this show, I feel like after the season, like if this is a part of the BB canon. Like, I think you guys should podcast about the season and talk about the strategy of New Dogs and Old Tricks like it was just another BB season, or at least the Jesse and Cody episode.
Phil, let's see when they film another Survivor season.
Yeah.
We might be going all in on the extended Cody Calafiore film and TV works.
I feel like this makes sense, Liana. You know, we were talking about new school and old school. Maybe we should call it New Dogs and Old Tricks.
Yes.
Rebrand it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. A real old tricks player.
Yeah. Look, Tyler didn't get cast in a Candy Cane movie to have old tricks be called boring, okay?
I can see the memes now.
All right, Liana, speaking of celebrities, quote unquote, which A-lister has Cody not appeared in a project with? So again, three of these celebrities Cody has indeed been in a movie with. One of them he has not. A.
Okay, wait. Just to clarify, were they ever acting in the same scene together?
I believe they were on the same call sheet at one point in time. So yes, Cody Calafiore has looked into the eyes of these celebrities. Is it A, Ice-T, B, Vivica A. Fox, C, NeNe Leakes, or D, DMX?
What an A-list.
Okay, I'm pretty sure Ice-T is one of them, because Pauly, I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but Pauly Calafiore and Kara are also raising money for a new movie. And for some reason, I believe Ice-T's name was like brought up in relation to that. So I don't know how. One of their stretch goals, the celebrity that they would get. So I think that one is correct. Now, I have absolutely no idea on the rest of them. So I am just going to go ahead and guess. Okay, well, DMX must have nothing better going on, so he's probably one of them. What were B and C again?
Vivica A. Fox or NeNe Leakes?
I feel like I'm going to go with B here.
I'm sorry. NeNe Leakes has not been featured in a Calafiore project. Vivica A. Fox has.
Rob,
we wondered how we followed up the Celebrity Apprentice, and apparently for Vivica A. Fox, it's a Calafiore project.
Usually the rule is if they've been on Celebrity Apprentice, they're open to anything.
That's true.
Although NeNe Leakes has been too, so I guess you were.
Yeah, but I believe Ice-T is in a film called Clinton Road, which is sort of like a horror film based in New Jersey. I believe Ice-T is sort of like this mysterious stranger who approaches Cody in a bar to tell him about this haunted road.
Oh my God. Mm. That's like
ironic, I'm pretty sure that's how an SVU episode starts as well.
Dun dun.
And actually, another fun fact as well, I found out that if we're talking about other reality TV alumni, Cody has starred in projects with not one, but two American Idol alumni. He starred in the aforementioned Clinton Road with Ace Young, and also starred in a movie with Constantine Maroulis, the same film as DMX is in.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that one truly a star-studded cast.
All right, let's move on here. Phil, I think Rob is familiar with the series Little Cupid, which Cody has recently starred in. So Cody is a main role in the series Little Cupid. Who does he play? A restaurateur who is the only one that can see Cupid. B, an attractive teacher helping one of his students find love in the schoolyard.
Cody's not a teacher.
C, a dog walker who looks after an amorous dog named Cupid. D, a dead Marine looking to get his angel wings by helping people fall in love.
You know, I don't think that Cody has the dramatic nuance to tackle the role of a dead Marine. I'm going to go with C, the dog walker or what have you. Is that correct?
How dare you? Cody Calafiore does and did have the capacity to play a dead Marine who is looking to get his angel wings by helping people fall in love.
No. Yeah. Like, I know that you know, D is the correct answer here, but Phil is not wrong. Cody Calafiore does not.
Hey, how dare you? The Calafiore family loves drama.
I don't deal with drama.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, let me stop down for a second. Let me play the trailer for Little Cupid, and I can sort of describe what's going on here. Because they sort of drop us in the middle of this. I had to actually read the description to find out who Cody was playing. He just sort of appears in fatigue, sitting next to a young girl who looks at least 12 years old and who is supposed to be his daughter. So, listen, no judgment on.
So I think that this is how this was described to me. Like, Cody's in a movie with a girl that's supposed to be his daughter, but there's no way. But I believe that when you die, you become the younger, most virile version of yourself. So as a ghost, he has turned back into younger Cody Calafiore. Wait,
so Cody's playing an old man? An old man?
No,
dead
he's
Marie?
Dead. He's dead. He's right. The ghost.
But the ghost is the young version of him.
Right. Yes. So like, God help us, if Rob Cesarino should die today, it would be the image of him as a model in 2002.
So, I think that if I had to guess, I think that he's actually been dead for a long time. I don't know if the daughter knew him. So I don't think he got old and then died and then is recently visiting. I think that he died as a young man, sadly, and then his daughter has grown up and is wondering who her dad is, and he is visiting her as a ghost. Remake of Ghost Dad.
Because that really needs a remake.
No, Ghost Dad is a different plot. Okay, sorry, go ahead, Mike.
All right, let's get into this. And I think we'll be able to judge from the forefront, just from an audio perspective, as to Cody's acting skills here as the dead Marine.
I want to help people fall in love.
How are you going to do that?
With your help.
Me?
Yeah. You're going to be my little Cupid.
That sounds kind of fun.
Kind of fun? You're going to help people fall in love and be hanging out with your dad. It's going to be a blast.
Do I get arrows?
No, you don't get arrows.
But you said Cupid.
Angela, you're not going to be running around shooting people with arrows.
What's wrong with Angela?
Oh.
There are rules, by the way. These are the rules.
Okay. Tell me the rules.
No one can know that you see me. No one else can see me or hear me. Just you. Rule number two. You can't tell anyone what we're doing. Not even the people that we're helping.
Okay.
When we're done setting up all the people that I have to, when I finally earn my wings, go to heaven.
Got it. That was fun, Dad.
It was. I once walked a piece of art.
Like you said, I get it from Mom.
Yeah, but you get your looks from me.
So what now?
Ew.
I don't know. I gotta go talk to the big man upstairs, and he's gonna tell me what to do next.
Derek?
Angela? Oh, hi, Mom. Who are you talking to? No one.
All right, I gotta stop.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So, listen, judge for yourself, okay? Whether or not Cody sold the line, I've got to go talk to the big man upstairs.
Does Cody have any, backup career choices if the acting thing doesn't really work out? I'm very curious about that. That whole trailer, even like the music that was playing, what was that? The xylophone thing that they found on, they made on GarageBand in 10 minutes.
Jane probably is like a self-starter. She probably made it up. Liana, any takes from your end about the trailer for Little Cupid?
I mean, do you think the big man upstairs knows about Angela's cookbook? Because, I mean, I heard that that's something that you can order. I think my favorite part also of this trailer, which with the video component, he awkwardly pats his daughter on the head, which is one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, I think he's sort of like, I'm a ghost. Am I allowed to touch her? We'll try it and see if it works.
But could you imagine, though, if instead of going with Cody, they went in a different direction where if Enzo was the ghost apparition visiting his daughter to try to bring love to the world. Yo, I'm trying to get my wings, yo.
Trying to clip them, yo. Let's clip them.
The meow meow. I got to talk to the big man upstairs, yo.
That's what I'm saying. You got to get me into heaven, yo.
After a dead aspiring rapper reaches back out to his daughter, asking to shave random people's backs so he can earn his fedora to get into heaven.
But you get your rap skills from me, yo.
Pat, pat.
Wait, is that the movie that DMX is in, or is that something different?
DMX plays God. Come on in!
DMX as God.
That was the big man upstairs, Rob.
The big man upstairs.
I just love it. He just casually puts out, like, rule number three, when I get my angel wings, I go to heaven.
Mm-hmm. This is, I think, a Renap episode, right? Like, guys are trying to get into heaven.
Yes, you're interested to get enough people married. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Same thing. Exact same thing.
Cody's acting voice is literally just whispering. That's all he's doing. He's just not speaking at full volume, and that's enough for him. That's Juilliard. That's all he really needs.
Does that mean Danny Briones is the best actress in the house? If it's whispering is an indicator?
I guess so.
Yvonne's given her lessons. Yeah.
And it's also, so I'm just looking here. Angela must help her dad, a Marine presumed killed in action, get his angel wings by helping people fall in love. Also starring Stephanie Bloom, I disavow that last name, in the touching role of Allison's mom.
You guys aren't related?
I hope not.
If she was in a movie with Cody Calafiore, you have to disown her. I'm so sorry, Mike.
That's the rule, unfortunately.
That would be one awkward family reunion.
Rob, let's go to you here as we move on. Cody's in a lot of Christmas movies. Christmas and a lot of Christmas movies. What is the name of one of the Christmas movies? So one of these are a real name of a Christmas movie that Cody's in, and three of them are fake.
Yes.
A, Mistletoe and Ivy. B, Boughs of Holly. C, Declan the Halls.
Boughs of Beth, was that?
Yeah, exactly. David
Jackson is in that one.
D, Jingle Bell, spelled B-E-L-L-E.
Oh, this is tough. Can I hear them one more time?
Sure. It's Mistletoe and Ivy, Boughs of Holly, Declan the Halls, and Jingle Bell.
I think the real one is Mistletoe and Ivy.
That is correct. Yes, indeed. Or I guess Ivy and Mistletoe is the proper name.
Is that a play on words?
Oh, yes, it is. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I have the trailer for Ivy and Mistletoe, which is coming very soon, actually. I believe November 1st.
Are they buddy cops, Ivy and Mistletoe?
No, there's Mistletoe involved, but one of the characters is named Ivy. So we're going to play this trailer, and it's very visual, so I'm going to describe sort of what's going on when nobody's talking.
Yes,
but
please.
We're going to listen to the eponymous Ivy talk first here.
I can't
can't get a flight out until the day after Christmas, Mom. Everything is canceled.
We'll just postpone Christmas till you get here.
Ivy wants to spend the holidays with her family.
Postpone Christmas? No way!
Go out on a drive.
What?
Sometimes life has other plans.
Thank goodness you found me.
You okay?
Yes, but my car is stuck and, oh, I have a flat.
You got two flats.
Can you get me to Boston?
Boston's a 6-hour drive in good weather.
This Christmas, Ivy will discover that not getting what she wants, she's huddled with a blanket, might be exactly what she needs. And then they're making cookies.
If anyone should have a restaurant in this town, it's you.
She has like a plate of charcuterie and it focuses on a chandelier. And then this man is saying grace, I think. A focus on a Christmas tree. And then Cody's like smiling. This Ivy woman's
talking. Have you ever thought that maybe Max was your reason?
Cody's walking down the stairs in a tie. Ivy's smiling at him. And they go in for a little bit of a kiss. It's very awkward. This Christmas, enjoy a new holiday romance from Candy Kane, the celebrated writer and director of What Happened Last Night, New Dog's Old Tricks, and Little Cupid, and award-winning producer of Anacostia, The Break with Benjamin Bryan, and Unraveling Knots, featuring Cody Calafiore, first villain Julianne Michelle, Carrie Genzel, and Cynthia Gibb. And they kiss as they slow pan to the mistletoe right above them, Ivy and Mistletoe. Oh, and then there's a dog that's walking on the couch for some reason. They did a 10-second shot of a dog on a couch.
We heard dogs play well, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know how normally trailers actually tell you about the movie? I have no idea what this movie is about, except for the fact that Cody had a really awkward, what I believe to be a pickup line of, hey, baby, you got two flats.
No, I think she literally has two flat tires.
No, but I agree with Liana. It sounds really euphemistic, even if it shouldn't be. Like,
what's the euphemism of you've got two flat tires? It sounds like an insult.
Listen, his brother is used to giving certain derogatory statements about things on people's chests. Maybe that's a Cody Calafiore ad lib.
I think the trailer is not giving up enough, because obviously there's a twist in the movie. And the twist is that the movie's actually horrible. they switch it at in the back half of the movie, and you realize, oh wait, this is actually complete dog crap.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why you think that, the dog.
Yeah,
that I got to think that Candy Kane, the first conversation with Cody when he gets out of the house, is like, so can you get Christmas for a cameo?
I was going to say Christmas is going to be the star. Like, this is everything.
Christmas star, put her on top of the tree.
This is everything Candy Kane wants in a person. It is a blonde female named Christmas. This is like an opportunity landed in her lap. She can make an entire universe out of Christmas.
Not just Christmas joy. And think about it, like, they already have all of the little sound clips from Big Brother. Just take all those jingles. I think that's pretty much how they made the soundtrack to this movie, just clipping together all of those. So I think it fits.
Yeah.
Do you think that Christmas, when she makes those poems, when she's on the nomination block, she's not actually doing it for anybody else except for Candy Kane? There's an audience of one. It's like, bravo.
My bravo.
This is exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, like, skip The Bold and the Beautiful. You're going straight to Candy Kane's films.
A CC God.
Oh,
Cody,
my God.
Cody just told her to do it right before. It's the audition process. That's what you have to do. You have to memorize one of those poems.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, that's Mistletoe and Ivy coming next month. November 1st. Liana, yeah. I know that's going to be right after Big Brother 22 finishes, but
Might
still be looking to fill that off season with some stuff, because it does, to Phil's point, I believe the plot is that Cody, Ivy, and those two flats get like invited to like her family Christmas celebration. And so she essentially invites a complete stranger to be and I guess her mom calls him like her reason. And so they fall in love, I believe.
Where's little Cupid?
Wait, did they have to postpone Christmas?
Right, because she was, I guess she like was gonna have trouble getting there, and then she got a flat tire in the snow.
Bet that they bring her to his Christmas. It sounds like she needs to get somewhere.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
They bring her to the Calafiori family Christmas.
Do they make it to Ivy's family, or is Cody kissing his dad in those scenes? We just missed it.
Oh, actually, you know what? That's a good point. Maybe Ivy isn't his love interest. Maybe she's his sister.
You know, I'm really starting to think that maybe the trailer isn't incoherent. Maybe the actual movie is just incoherent.
Yeah, Phil,
and
you
it's
mentioned
an accurate trailer.
Yeah. I was going to say you mentioned it was a twist. Mm. I think it's pretty obvious.
All right, let's move on here, Liana. Which one of these is not the name of a character that Cody has played? Mm. A, Max Carson. B, Gabe Corsetti. C, Eric Dittmeyer. D, Tyler Jensen.
I have no idea. Can you read them one more time?
Sure. Max Carson, Gabe Corsetti, Eric Dittmeyer, Tyler Jensen.
Eric Dittmeyer?
That is correct. That's a fake name that I use, actually. That is correct. The other
what
three.
What do you mean that's a fake name that you use?
Sometimes if I don't want to give away my name, I call myself Eric Dittmeyer.
Like,
where are you that you don't want to give away your name?
Like when you go
to a hotel and they're like, please, this is Eric Dittmeyer. If anybody finds out, Mike Bloom is staying here.
Exactly. Those hourly charged hotels. Maybe you do a log of Eric Dittmeyer. You'll see a trail a mile wide.
Now we know Eric Dittmeyer.
Those days were behind you, Mike.
I used to play a lot of online reality games, and they would like ask for your information. And so I'm like, I don't want to give my personal information away. And so I would use the name Eric Dittmeyer.
Eric Dittmeyer. What's the meaning of Eric Dittmeyer?
I don't know where Dittmeyer came from, but Eric, I went through a period in time where like people would approach me and like, you don't look like a Mike, you look like an Eric. And so I decided to, maybe it was also around the time of BB-8. So I wanted to name it after America's player.
And Dittmeyer, you just came up with that?
I just came up with the last name.
That was all you?
That was an MB original or an ED original.
Yeah.
But yeah,
does he have a middle name, your fake character, or no?
Louise.
LDE?
Yeah, L.
ELD was it? ELD? Big ELD energy there, Mike.
Oh, no. So Max Carson is actually the name of Cody's character from Mistletoe and Ivy. Mm. Gabe Corsetti is the name of the dead Marine he plays in Little Cupid. And Tyler Jensen is the name of the character he plays in Clinton Road as he's approached by Ice-T about a haunted road in New Jersey.
Ooh.
Look, Tyler Jensen didn't call Clinton Road haunted for what insert meme there.
Call something old tricks.
Yeah.
All right, Phil, one of Cody's upcoming movies is called Magic in Mount Holly. Surprise, surprise.
Not
it's
bad.
A Christmas movie in which. So in Magic of Mount Holly, a set of shoes. Yeah, they find a set of shoes that can allow you to live someone else's life. B, they find a stocking that has a perfect Christmas gift for each person in it. C, it has a pair of glasses that let you see into people's hearts. D, it has a paintbrush that can predict the future.
Can you say those one more time for me, please?
Liana is breaking.
Just to be clear, one of these things actually does exist as a plot point in the movie Magic in Mount Holly. So we have A set of shoes that can allow you to live someone else's life.
Oh,
B, a stocking that has a perfect Christmas gift in it for each person. C, a pair of glasses that let you see into people's hearts. D, a paintbrush that can predict the future.
Ugh, they're really just making anything nowadays. I'm going to go with B. Is that right?
No, Magic in Mount Holly, believe it or not, is focused around a young woman named Holly coming into possession of a paintbrush that can predict the future.
What do you mean? Like when she tries to paint, it'll paint for her, and yes, it'll tell
Isaac
her.
Mendez from Hero Style. She paints, and the paintbrush predicts what's going to happen.
And it's a Christmas movie, right? It's Christmas?
Don't get me wrong. It's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, we all know painting. Like, that's the what we do. We drink hot cocoa, sit by the fire, and then we just paint and predict our future. I guess.
New version of tarot cards. I couldn't decide which one I thought was funnier. I think my favorite are the shoes that allow you to live someone else's life, because it doesn't even really make sense. Is it one pair of shoes that then morphs, or like, how does that even work?
Oh, Liana, you are clearly not a fan of Adam Sandler's The Cobbler, because that is the plot of it. Adam Sandler puts on a pair of shoes and he transforms into that person.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't have a deep bench when it comes to all my Sandler references. Although the glasses to see in your heart as well, I also thought were funny, because I just imagine them as just like, he's got cardiomyopathy. Like, isn't that actually what he wants? It's just,
my God, his cholesterol.
that right heart valve checked out, man.
All right. So,
I have a question, Mike. Oh, sorry.
Of course.
Where are these movies going? Like, I'm confused as to what exactly, after Candy Kane finishes editing and the movie's done, where is she putting it? Because I've never seen any of these in, like, the theater. Of course, the theaters are closed. Maybe it's a drive-in thing now.
I actually do think that, so there is a big business for all these movies. I think that to make it, I think you end up on there's all these different Hallmark channels. Just ask Matt Elrod / Wyatt Nash. They show holiday movies 24/7, starting from at least November 1st. Then I also think that there's other networks. Like, I think that WeTV gets in on this. So there are a lot of cable outlets that are looking for these. And then I think a lot of them probably also go to Amazon, just on demand, where people can watch them. So I think that the dream is that Hallmark picks up one of these and puts it in the rotation.
Which is probably why she puts out like 6 Christmas movies, right? Like, it really is casting the net wide of, well, if I put out 10 Christmas movies, if she gets one, that's
Phil,
a 10% success rate.
This should be your next project.
That's what I'm saying, yo. I might just get on this Hallmark game, but man, you know what I mean? Just shoot something for $5,000 and everyone watches it. I think that's probably why her name is Candy Kane, though, right? Yes. I mean, I feel like that would make sense.
Just credibility.
Marketing that, instantly. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
make like one every winter, single year.
Eric Dittmeyer comes into finding a pair of glasses to let you see other people's hearts.
You know, she should listen to this. We got pitches for our next 5 years, next 5 Christmases. We got
starring Nene Leakes.
Yeah, Max.
Phil, you really just need to get an internship on what was it? NDOT, and then I think you're in that universe. You're ready to go.
Listen, this is my this is my side hustle. I'm done with, after Rob at the podcast, that's my next thing, yo.
Go for it.
All right, Rob, Cody has a project that's currently in pre-production called Days Like This, and we'll see how long it takes until it actually comes into production, which is, surprise, surprise, directed by Candy Kane. And we only see the poster.
How about, in the ultimate twist, is Candy Kane actually Cody Calafiore?
Ah, they have same initials.
You never saw that coming.
Check the hotel registries, guys.
Yes, it's the Eric Dittmeyer of Cody Calafiore.
All right, so all we have so far is the poster, which she picks like a very like bedraggled Cody hunched over in a chair, like
bedraggled,
like just like a little worse for wear. Like, I can't believe I'm in this mess. There's one tagline over the poster for Days Like This. What is that tagline? A, 3's company, 4's a problem. B, nice. The enemy of my enemy is my girlfriend. C, if the shoe fits, sell it. D,
the shoe fits, you can see somebody else's life.
Exactly.
The Adam Sandler tagline.
Yes.
D, don't look a gift horse in the heart.
What's the name of the film again?
Days Like This.
Days Like This. Okay. I'll say the enemy of my enemy is my girlfriend.
Nope, that is a Mike Bloom original. No, unfortunately, it is 3's a company, 4's a problem. I don't know what that means. Maybe this is some sort of polyamorous relationship gone awry.
Yes. Okay, well, he is in an alliance called Triple Threat, so that does make sense. So three's company, four is a crowd.
Yeah, I think that's what Kacer was actually talking about last night in his speech. No, Mike, I have a question.
Yeah, love triangle.
Yeah, love triangle. What is a gift horse? Do you make that up?
Well, so there's a phrase, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, which is sort of like a Trojan horse thing of like, don't bite the hand that feeds you. Right. I change it to don't look a gift horse in the heart, which could be something romantic.
Yeah, but Trojan horse is bad. Trojan horse is like, hey, you think you're getting something good, but it's actually bad. You don't look a gift horse in the mouth is that like, hey, you got something for free. Why are you complaining about it?
Right. I feel like you would want to look a gift horse in the heart, though, right? You want to see like the Trojan horse. You want to see what's going on under there, you know?
Really, you don't want to stand behind it no matter what. That's right. Really where you can get yourself into trouble.
Yeah, that exactly. Really was the tagline for days like this. Don't stand behind the gift horse.
Yes.
did the magic paintbrush paint the poster, Mike?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, actually, and you can actually see if you put on special glasses, you can see inside the gift horse and see its heart. So it's very, very easy. All right. So at the end of all this, we have a tie between Liana and Rob. I'm so happy we do because I have a tiebreaker. Get your pads and paper out here. So as Liana mentioned, Pauly Calafiore and Cara Maria Sorbello from The Challenge are making a feature film called Peekaboo. I need you to write down for me currently. On Indiegogo, how much money has been made to back this film?
Oh, man.
Whoever gets it the closest wins.
Is it closest or is it Price is Right rules?
We'll go closest.
Okay.
All right, we'll put on some nice music while, let's see, while all this is happening.
Okay.
Stupid. Okay. All right. So, Rob, how much money has Peekaboo, starring Pauly Calafiore and Cara Maria, made on Indiegogo so far?
I'm going to say that Pauly and Cara Maria are
stay crushing it.
At $11,000 is my bid.
All right, Liana.
Okay, I said $1,000.
$1,000.
So Pauly and Cara have put in a goal of $70,000 for Peekaboo to help make their future feature film dreams come true. They currently have raised $512.
Oh. I thought they had clout.
Well, I only get you so far and then make $500 from it.
Gotta get that candy cane money.
Boy, $512, that doesn't even get you half a day at Nicole's wedding.
My God. And apparently, though, to your point, Liana, I believe this is a candy. Actually, you know what? This is a campaign from Candy Cane.
Candy cane.
No!
The plot thickens.
Well, yes. I mean, look, it's not a Christmas holiday movie, right? Yeah. It's a horror movie. She's not, you know, jack-o'-lantern.
This Pauly and Cara Maria, they need to just get destination wedding, invite all of the Big Brother and Challenge alumni, $3,000 to show up. They've got the money right there. Film the movie at the wedding. You've got everybody there. It's a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Okay, I need to read the stretch goals because I just read this for Peekaboo. So they set it
stretch goals.
So they set it at a very conservative $70,000, again, of which they made $512 of.
Okay.
At $100,000, quote, we'll cast a well-known actor.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. What
Cara Maria on line two, yeah. Sir.
It means you cast Cody. That's exactly what that means.
$150,000. Our film will run for a week in theaters in NYC and Los Angeles.
Doubtful.
I don't know about that. Was this pre-COVID or post-COVID? Because it's post-COVID.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying that Pauly is not up to speed on all of the precautions to take during coronavirus? How dare you, Phil?
All right. Well, luckily, at the mere price of $250,000, a sequel would already be in the works. It simply says, we'll make another film.
Sure. They'll have the leftover money, so sure.
At $375,000, we'll make a TV or web series too.
Why not?
Where is this coming from? Who are they talking to that they're able to just set up a TV show? I'm so confused.
I think they're just rambling at this point. And somebody wrote it down as stretch goals. At $500,000.
Oh, they're stretch goals.
We'll be able to bring Peekaboo to Sundance, quote, or the like.
Or the like.
In my experience of submitting, like, just stuff to festivals and stuff like that, that's not how it works. Absolutely not. The movie has to be a certain standard. Mm-hmm. And just if you have $500,000, you can't just, oh yeah, we're going to just go to the greatest film. We're going to go to the best American film festivals. Yeah, if we have $500,000.
I would like to share with everybody here in Sundance a brand new film.
So, speaking of dance, Treasure!
Called Peekaboo, yeah.
At $750,000.
Oh my god.
We'll make a pilot for a reality show. I don't think this has anything to do with the movie at this point.
What?
I feel like that's the more marketable thing, yeah. Right? I feel like that is what they're known for.
At $1 million. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, at what? $1 million, why don't you give a guess, Rob?
We will cure coronavirus.
so close. We'll make a third film in a genre voted on by backers. Almost. American choice.
Yeah, it's.
I want to see them do like a World War II like epic. That's what I want to see Pauly Calafiore tackle next.
Don't we all?
And finally, $2 million and up. And I mean this in all sincerity. This is what is written on the Indiegogo, quote, "We'll make a life-changing film about a school shooting with A-list actors."
You're joking, right?
No.
All right.
So, I'm out.
Shut it down.
Oh my god.
So suffice it to say, maybe we're drawing a bit more acclaim to this, but let's not go to $2 million.
I think we're far enough. We'll be okay.
Maybe that's why no one's donating. Maybe it's not just because of, you know, like we don't want to see this movie. We just don't want to reach that level. I guess. I have no idea.
The next Bowling for Columbine.
Oh my god. Wow. Well, the Calafiore brothers have just brought so much entertainment to this game. So, Liana, congratulations on the win. Rob,
by the way, if Cody wins this season, they still would not be 25% of the way to that goal.
Thank goodness.
No, but if Cody invests it all in here, I guess the stretch goals also similarly mean like it all stacks on top of each other, right? So if you add $500,000, Peekaboo will get a well-known actor, will be running in NYC and Los Angeles and Sundance or the like. Another film will be made and a TV or web series based off the film.
Hey, look, at the very least, what a week it'll be on the B&B.
That's the one yes. Good thing that might come from this. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on and submitting yourself to the resume.
Thank you. This was the highlight of my day. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to come into the B&B. And Phil, always great to chat with you, too. OK.
Yeah. Have a nice day.
All right. And looking forward to hearing very many reviews from the viewers of the many film works of Cody Calafiore, and hoping not to hear personally from Pauly Calafiore. Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Bye, Rob. All right. Rob Cesternino, everybody. So close there, but I think we all won or lost in finding out the resume of Cody Calafiore.
I won for sure. I'm going through every single one of the films. I'm going to watch New Dogs, Old Tricks, like right after this podcast is over, just so you guys know.
You can come back and be our Cody Calafiore correspondent.
That's exactly what I'll do. I'll keep up with those feeds 100%.
I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh. Okay. I was gonna maybe have a discussion question, but to be honest, I don't even think I can top that. And I'm starting to get messages from my boss about like, why are you not doing work stuff? So I think I'm gonna have to go ahead and pass, even though I really have nothing to discuss. The thing I was gonna bring up though was Julie Chen, of course, saying leave judgment at the door. So I think really we can just add that to her list of taglines, and I'm just curious to see where she's gonna go from here.
I think it seems like her perpetual message is going to be about like being nice to people. So I guess we'll see. You know, I know that you and me and Maggie at Liana had done our draft of Julie Chen phrases. I guess maybe we didn't focus enough on like what it is to be nice to others.
Mm-hmm. I think we went too broad. We thought they were going to be more general. We should have really focused in on a subtopic. Maybe we'll have to do another draft at some point, really focusing on how we can be kind to one another.
I don't know where like all of Julie's phrases and stuff are like, just why now? Why is this just Julie like talking to people about like 2020? Like this is Julie handling like COVID and stuff like that, just saying like, be kind. I don't get why she's doing this right now. But it's hilarious.
I don't think anybody does. I don't think anyone knows. Oh my goodness.
Julie's message to the people. No, I will say, honestly, like just back to, I'm sorry, I'm talking about Pauly's thing again. Like, all, like, my friends, you know, when we shoot a lot of, like, when we shoot films and stuff like that, you know, we do GoFundMes and we do Kickstarters and stuff like that. There's, like, sometimes, like, films will make up to, like, $2,000 or something like that. I've literally never seen someone, of course, Pauly is not, like, someone of this magnitude, but that is criminally low. Although thank God that he only made $500. That's it's a mess.
Yeah, I remember. So somebody sent me the link before, but it was like right when they posted it, so they didn't have that much money. The fact that still they've only amassed $500 is hilarious and also a little sad.
I'm surprised that Cody's not talking about it on the feeds on the rank. Like, hey, donate to my bro's thing. You know what I'm saying? I have no idea.
Yeah, pump it up. Well, especially, you know, yeah. Like, it buzz
going. Especially if it's a candy cane project. I also wonder if he's going to get tipped off as to when Ivy and Mistletoe drops. You know, could he plug that?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, as we learn from the Memphis show, like they don't get any news, Mike. Okay.
I would love to see that be like one of the competitions, and like the prize is you get to win. Like the,
you get to watch it.
You get to watch the candy cane original, and Cody's gonna be like, "Yo, that's me right here. This is my scene. Look at this."
Oh my goodness. Well, to finish things off, each and every week here on the B&B, we like to highlight a specific cause or charity in the world today, outside of the Big Brother house and outside of the B&B. Phil, I don't want to, you know, completely put you on the spot, but as our guest of honor, I was wondering if you had any particular causes or charities you wanted to highlight as the guest of honor.
No, not like something really prevalent on the mind. If you guys want to go, I might think of something, but no, not currently. I wouldn't say.
Liana, do you have anything?
Yes, I have one. Hold on one sec. I need to pull it up. So I heard about this actually on another podcast, but Bailey has been doing a lot of yoga on the feeds, which I try to like, I've really tried to do yoga with them where like I get my mat out and I go along with Bailey leading yoga. But usually they cut away because they're, you know, they're trying to focus on feed conversations. I'm like in downward facing dog just being like, crap, help. How do I get out?
Yeah, don't please don't use Big Brother Life Feeds as a yoga instructional video.
It's free, sort of, with CBS All Access. But no, so I would like to plug, it's called Black Boys Om, which is a black focused yoga like channel. They have a website. They do stuff online. They do stuff in person. And so you can go to blackboysom.org, because as someone who does a lot of yoga herself, not just from watching Bailey on the live feeds, I think yoga is something that's just been super, super valuable to me. And so the fact that this exists, because, you know, there's a lot of like, oh, yoga is a white person thing, I feel like, in the West especially. And so what this does is this tries to reach out to show like, look, yoga and meditation is for everyone. Mindfulness is for everyone. And so you can go to blackboysohm.org. They have like a donate or a give section, and they talk about all of the stuff that they're doing. And so that's something that I think is super important. I know it's super important for me. And I think if everybody does yoga, I think we'll have a happy place where we can all put on the shoes of other people and learn about other people's lives and really just live harmoniously together.
I mean, look, it's been a tough few weeks, both on the inside and outside of the house. I think it's gotten people stressed and a bit wild up. And I do think that yoga is something that can help sort of center yourself and focus yourself. And we're all about mental health here on the B&B, and especially highlighting also a subsection of how maybe yoga has become such a stigmatized practice in terms of what we usually think of when we think of a yoga instructor. So to draw highlights on a specific community that's associated with yoga, I think is awesome. So be sure to check that out. We'll put the link in the show notes as well to that. Phil, thank you so much for coming into the B&B. We had such a great time, and you have learned so much, or have learned even less about filmmaking somehow based on what we've subjected you to. But you were such a great sport for all of this. And truly, I wanted to thank you for coming on and being such an awesome guest.
No, thank you so much for having me. This was just, I really just needed this for me, at least, just to be able to just laugh about stuff again, like with the Big Brother house going on. And I'm just now super, I had no idea that Cody had such a, you know, expansive career and filmography. So, you know, I'm going to watch all of his films. I promise you, the next time I watch, next time I talk to you, Mike, I'll be a Cody Calafiore expert, 100%.
You can do your senior thesis on the works of either, of course, Candy Cane or Cody Calafiore, although it seems they are the same person. Yeah, exactly. So, you know.
Well, if people want to keep track of you on social media, what's the platform of choice and the handle?
So you can, I actually changed my Twitter profile name. You can follow me on Twitter at listenupphillip.
Nice.
Phillip with one L. And then I'm also just still like watching movies and reviewing a lot of movies and TV shows. And you can follow me on that on letterboxd.com/PNTJR. But yeah, that's what I'm up to right now.
All right, Liana, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Liana RHAP. We are wrapping up Canada's Drag Race. So the finale of Canada's Drag Race was yesterday when we are at the time of us recording. So blah, 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 Beth and Amon and I are going to get together.
Are you sure it wasn't Kaser?
I might be. We are going to get together to talk about the finale of Canada's Drag Race, which has just been so incredibly fun. Such a fun journey. I'm really looking forward to that. So definitely check that out.
You can always follow me at A Mike Bloom Type. You can check out the exit press that I did with Kaser this week. Pinching myself, I got to talk with Kaser. Just an incredible, say what you want to about as a player, but I think top five person to ever play Big Brother. And he, of course, gave a lot of really fun comments about his time in the house, what he thought about the house guests, and particularly the conversations that he made that certainly, I think, really made our hearts particularly full as Big Brother fans over the past 4 weeks. You can check that out at parade.com. Of course, Tough as Nails also finished up this past week. We got together with Phil Kogan to send off season one. I thought it was a really, really interesting finale, and Phil had some great insights as per usual to offer. And of course, doing our usual stuff with Beyond Top Chef, Down the Hatch, and I was able to join Kevin Mahadeo and LaTanya Starks on Everything is Super this week to mourn the unfortunate passing of Chadwick Boseman and talk about the life and legacy of both him and T'Challa the Black Panther. And it was a really fantastic discussion that should be hitting your feeds on Saturday morning if you're at all interested. So that's going to do it for this week on the B&B. Next week, you know what? We had a filled tea on this week. It only makes sense we have Jenny Autumn on next week. So Jenny is making her return to the B&B as we talk about the final pre-jury week of Big Brother 22. What will the BB basement provide? Who the hell knows? But we're going to get into some stuff here with Jenny. If you have ideas for games that you want to send in, please do. You just heard what we did. We'll talk about literally anything Big Brother related. rhapbnb@gmail.com. I want to thank all of you for listening and supporting us through these weeks. Special thanks to Rob Cesternino for hopping on and playing the game with us and for being the architect of the B&B in general. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes, and Wolfram America for his kick-ass theme song. Liana and I will be back next week with Jenny Autumn talking about week 5. Until then, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. Better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. Better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.